Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 19th, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. And I tell you, what a wild, wacky home game this weekend to sound like Johnny Carson. We had angle shooters, we had rat holes. The only thing we didn't have was Remington revolvers coming out and popping guys in the back of the head over their whiskey.
Well, you know, before we get into that, I got to ask you, Scott. Let's say, now, you're a Devil Race fan, right? And you go to these games. And
mildly after what they did to the Threshers this week, but yes.
But let me ask you now. Let's say our good friend Scott Kazmir, who apparently is returning to the mound soon. Let's say he's pitching, and he throws a fastball down the middle, and Derek Jeter hits a deep fly ball. Do you think that Evan Longoria on third base is watching that fly ball, and he starts screaming, "Get out of here! Get out of here! Get out of here!" And then when it does clear the wall, he goes, "Yeah!" Do you think Evan Longoria would do that to his friend Scott Kazmir?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
So explain to me then why in the middle of our home game, when you were literally 2 bets from the felt and I got you all in when I flopped a set of 5s and you had the nut flush draw, that Faso stands up and says, "Spade, spade." And then when the spade comes, he goes, "Yes, flush." And he's not even in the hand. Explain that to me, Scott, how a player at the table roots for another player to win. I can't figure that out.
Oh, Chris, you're so cute sometimes. Well, first of all, let's totally obliterate your analogy to baseball. And by totally obliterate, I mean I don't have to do anything at all. I could just sit here and laugh at it and obliterate it. Baseball is a team game, and therefore it would be completely illogical for my future good friend Evan Longoria to cheer for Derek Jeter to hit a home run out. Poker is a completely individual game, and, you know, players are free agents. They can cheer for who or what they choose to cheer for.
Okay, so you're in a track meet then. And you're running the 100 meters, okay? And it's, you know, Gale Devers and all the famous runners. And do you think that when Jamaica takes the lead, that the American roots against the other American who is right there next to him, he goes, "Go Jamaica!" No.
See? No,
they keep their mouth
shut. You're helping me obliterate your point. you're not advancing at anything.
It makes no difference. You don't root for another country to win if you know, you're not in the race. You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense.
See, no, the better analogy would be 3 American sprinters running down the track and the huffing and puffing third place rooting for the second place to catch the first place. That's the analogy that you should have come up with had you actually thought through your analogy, but you didn't, so.
But you get my point. How do you root for somebody at the poker table against someone else and it's a home game, friendly home game? I mean, it makes no sense. So then once the flush got there on the turn, I said, "All right, Faso, how about rooting for the board to pair?" Oh, my God. I was so mad.
I think the rest of us were actually quite happy.
Yeah. But you went on a wicked tear after that. Who knows what would have happened if you'd lost that pot?
Well, I would have rebought and still got on a wicked tear. But the fact that I was able to suck out on you with Fasso's great encouragement.
Yes.
Made it all that much sweeter.
Yes, it was one for the ages.
All right, but you know, we got a phone call this week, Chris.
Yeah.
Word about our wild, wacky game apparently got out very, very quickly. And so we got a call from a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Uh-huh.
And why don't we listen to this and see what we have to say.
Hey, Chris and Scott. This is Wildman from PokerSoup.tv. Can't wait to go on that cruise with you guys. It's going to be awesome. And I have a question for this week, and it's is it okay to act out of turn to induce action from another player? Some people may say this is an angle shoot. I'm not sure. I'm just hoping you guys can talk about that on the show and let us know. And then also, what are we going to do if on this cruise we find some of these angle shooters? I say we throw them overboard. All right, guys. Have a good one.
Well, contrary to what people requested, we won't be making anyone walk the plank, or we aren't going to be keel-hauling anybody.
Well, you know, and here's the reason why. It's just not creative. I mean, come on, Blas is a creative guy. And, you know, throw overboard, that's the best he can come up with? Come on, that's too boring. If I'm going to spend some time to really punish someone, it's not going to be, hey, I'm gonna stick my finger in your food. You know, it's got to be something creative. So, you know, at least walk the plank. I don't know, dip you down in the sharks or something. I don't know, we'll come up with something.
You know, I wanted to go on the record so that it was clear what happened. And on our forum at antiupmagazine.com forum in the publisher's blog, I wrote down an interesting hand that happened in our home game between me and our columnist, Dr. Frank Toscano. You know, it was stud 8, and right before 7th Street, I made the speech that I was making a bad call on his bet. Knowing that I probably was behind with my two pair, but I had an all low board, so I was trying to make him think that the only thing I could win with or split with, I mean, was a low. And I ended up making a boat on the river. And when I picked up my hole cards, I saw the boat, looked up at my board, and saw to make sure I had the boat. When I saw the pair on my board, I thought I was first to act, and I was like, check. And then I looked up and saw Frank had a bigger pair on board, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry, you're first to act. Or it's your turn to bet, was what I said, I think, which sort of made him bet, I think. I don't know. But he put out a bet, and then I had a boat, so I raised him. And everyone went, ooh! You know, because they thought I was angle shooting, which I could never even think of that as an angle shoot.
Well,
never mind.
I don't think
do
we
it.
Were thinking you're angle shooting. We were pretty sure you're angle shooting.
Yeah, no. I definitely wasn't angle shooting, because I had no idea. I honestly did not realize that I wasn't first to act. I planned on check raising when I thought I was first to act. And then when I realized I wasn't, I just played the hand out, because it would look kind of sneaky or fishy to just call with a boat. So I raised, and then... You
not
know,
after
you
checked out a turn, I wouldn't.
Well, that's bull. I mean, I don't think that's baloney. You know, I still think I would look like I was soft playing him if I didn't raise.
Soft playing him. All right. Okay.
Well, anyway, I put it up on the board, and then there's a lot of discussion going on in the forum now about it. But I honestly, 100% on record, did not angle shoot, you know. Angle shoot means you intentionally did it, you know what I mean? It's a mistake is one thing, but not an angle shoot, you know. So that's what I did. You have no clue what an angle shoot is, Scott. You don't.
No, but I know how you play the game. And so, I mean, I think that's the issue here that I think is coming up with the forum and was in the home game is that you know, you approach the home game differently than some other folks. So when you do something, people don't give you necessarily the credit that they may give, say, Fasso for doing the same thing. So yeah. Doesn't mean you angle shot. It just means that, you know, the ball bounced towards the angle shot accusation.
Yeah.
Because it happened to you.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm just on record to say that it clearly was not a conscious angle shot thought. I wouldn't even begin to know how to do one, you know, intentionally. So if I did it unintentionally, then I apologize to Frank. And we talked about it already, and he's fine with it. So I'm moving on. But we also had some interesting things about the home game with rat holing, you know, or going south, which sounds a lot nicer. but it was an interesting case where Fasso had put some money on the table because he wanted to make sure he had enough in case someone called a no-limit game. And then later on, when he had built his stack back up again, he took the money off, and it was cash. And he took the money off, and we didn't say anything to him because we didn't really realize he had done it because he had a big enough stack that the bills were hidden. But then later on, he said, hey, you know, was I rat-holing? he like asks if he was doing it. And we're like, yeah, where's the cash? And he said, oh, I put it away because I have more than the buy-in now. I didn't think I need to keep it out there. And we're like, no, that's still going south. You put that money on the table, now it's in play. You know, it's like saying you cash it in for chips and then put chips in your pocket. There's no difference. And then once he understood what happened, he put the money back on the table. But it's funny that someone who's so adamant against going south and rat holers would do it and not realize he did it.
Well, there's shades of gray there, and I'm not going to say. I mean, obviously, I was the first to say yes, that was rat holing. But there are, you know, in a home game, there are shades of gray, and that I think that's what's playing into both of these discussions. You know, if we were at the Bellagio, it would be a completely different issue on both of these than it was. But in a home game, this is a question I am interested in the nation responding to. Should there be, or should there be some tolerance at least, for some exceptions to the rules of poker in a home game?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Only the thing is, though, is that there is still a level of knowledge that you'd have to take an account for, and at what point do you set that limit? Like, oh, I expect Facet to know what rat-holing is since he's the first one to speak up about it being so distasteful. You know what I mean? So if he doesn't even know when he's doing it himself and he's against it, how can you set some sort of parameters for a home game like that?
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying is do there need to be hard and fast parameters, or can stuff be a case-by-case basis? And to me, a home game is a fun game. It's get the buddies together, let's play some cards. Obviously, we want to play it, generally speaking, to the prescribed way of playing poker. But I see some room for, you know, hey, if somebody did something unintentionally, all right, we'll let them know, hey, let's not do that again. Or let's rectify the situation in a friendly manner. Our point is here that even friendly home games can have some problems, and I guess that's what we need to address on maybe a future show, is how do you resolve these things when you have players that treat things differently or look at them differently. And it's tough in a home game because you want to keep it friendly, you want to keep it together, and you're going to have disputes, so you need to resolve them or find a way to resolve them, hopefully, in a way that everybody's happy with. And that's not always easy to do, I don't think. But I will be curious whether people in home games how they've handled this stuff like this in the past. So hopefully our mailbag will be runneth over at podcast@andyupmagazine.com. Speaking of mailbag, this isn't a mailbag, but it was a great letter that came a couple weeks ago from a listener, a longtime Anti-Up National that he describes himself as, Ben Luton. He shot us an email. He said that unfortunately his girlfriend's grandfather had passed away, and he was going to actually head down to Tampa Bay for the funeral. And wanted to work in some cards because the last time he was down here, he went to play poker with this grandfather. He knew the grandfather liked poker, and it was a good way to kind of honor his memory. So he wrote us back after the funeral to say, hey, he came down. He did make it to the poker room and found something interesting. And I don't usually get all poltergeistish, but this is kind of funny. You know, he's playing. He gets his money all in with pocket queens. He's called by two people. He's facing a gazillion outs here. I think there's like two overcards for one hand and flush draw and straight draws for the other one. Gets it in. He's sweating all of his money in there. And the loudspeaker comes over and says, Sal, to the tournament. Sal, take your seat. Well, it turns out that the grandfather's name was Sal. And immediately after the announcement was over, obviously the cards were finished out. And Ben had dodged all those bullets, baby. Took down a big pot. So, did Sal have something to do with this?
Oh, my God. That's unbelievable.
And at the same time, Sal's daughter played his, and I love this, his time of death in the lottery.
Oh, my God.
And it hit for 2,600 clams.
How do you pick someone's time of death and go play the numbers? That is so sick.
I don't know how kind-hearted the Sal guy was when he was on the earth, but he certainly is a hell of a guy in the afterlife. So, Ben, you know, we're, again, absolutely terribly distraught over the loss of your girlfriend's grandfather, but yeah. Very happy to hear that there was a little cheer coming out of an unfortunate situation.
And Sal, if you're listening, I might be playing in an event this weekend. If you want to help out, I'd greatly appreciate it.
All right, so real quick, we want to get one more reminder in here. No, it's not about the cruise, but you can still book. But our Vegas meetup is coming up. It's going to be at 9 p.m. July 2nd. We'll gather in the sports book right outside the Caesars Poker Room at Caesars Palace. And hopefully we'll get enough players together that we can go in there and demand an ante up table be set up to play a game. And if not, we'll just get together with folks that are out there and chat a little bit and, you know, play our own way. So come out and join us.
Yeah, maybe I'll angle shoot somebody while I'm there.
Well, I'm sure we can count on that.
Yeah,
maybe this
sure.
should be an over-under. Maybe we'll get that that guy Gary to do an analysis on the best Chris bets out there.
Oh, my God. All right, let's move on to the Anti-Up News Desk.
Brian Koppelman and David Levine, the guys who brought us Rounders, Chris, are reportedly back at working on another poker movie. This one will be set in the online poker world of Costa Rica, and Leonardo DiCaprio's name has been attached to the film.
See, now, I'm excited and upset at the same time at this. I'm so looking forward to see what these guys come up with because, you know, I love that movie and I loved Tilt, even though it got canceled. But I don't like Leonardo DiCaprio, so I'm not sure what to feel about this.
How can you not like Leonardo DiCaprio?
I've never liked Leo. I don't know what it is. I just don't like him.
He actually is an amazing actor. I think I've said this before. He's a guy that I don't want to like, but I can't help but not like him. He's an amazing actor. He plays good characters.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's going to be awesome in a poker movie.
Maybe. I'm starting to soften up on the guy. I mean, I liked Gangs of New York, even though I wasn't really, stuff like that. So I don't know. I guess I'm softening up on him. So maybe I'll if he does a good job in this movie and I like the movie, then I'll become a Leo fan. I'll start getting Tiger Beat and stuff, you know.
All right, turning from movies to TV, Simpsons producer Sam Simon is bringing his much-talked-about private poker games to Playboy TV in a series called Sam's Game.
Wow.
A host of celebrities are on board for the games that will be played at the Palms.
Wow.
All right, here's the thing. I'm sure this is entertaining television.
Yeah.
And it certainly gives me a reason to tell the wife, hey, we've got to subscribe to Playboy TV now. but is this really the poker game we want to see when I'm watching Playboy TV? Isn't there another type of poker game that probably rivals in popularity that might be better suited for a network such as this?
Yeah, and I'm not going to be the one to say, but aren't you looking for quality poker, when you're watching poker? Yeah, I won't be saying that here. So clearly there's another game they should be playing on that channel.
All right, and then finally our World Series updates for the week. Phil Ivey and Brock Parker now each have two bracelets this year,
man.
Obliterating that bet. Roland DeWolf has completed poker's Triple Crown. He now has a World Series bracelet to go with his World Poker Tour win and European Poker Tour wins. And finally, Andy Upper's Dave Schneider, who goes by Carbide XXX, and Scott Rodgeville, who goes by Hats and Eyeglasses, have cashed at this year's World Series. And if there's any others out there, please let us know.
That's awesome. Unbelievable.
It is.
Yeah, that's
fantastic. We love it when our guys go out there and put some money down on a dream, and the dream comes true.
You know, and they always do decent in the Apes, too, so it's no surprise that they do well in the World Series, which is a lower-tier series than our Apes, but all the same, I'm happy that they cashed. All right, well, I can hear the hotline ringing. It's 813-448-1120. Be sure to call the hotline and leave a message, and if we use it, Scott will send you something cool. This one comes from Jeram, who is responding to another call we had about multi-tabling and how it doesn't work at higher limits. So let's see what he has to say.
Hey, guys. This is Jeremy, a.k.a. Jeram, from the Forum and Ante Up Nation. I'm calling comment in regards to what you guys are talking about with multi-tabling. I think an important distinction needs to be made that at the higher limits, in order to be able to multi-table successfully, I don't think just tightening up and playing only premium hands is going to be as successful as maybe at the lower limits, because you're just going to get exploited, I think. As being a super rock, they're going to identify you really quick. So probably not the best a plan at those higher limits. And then also, you know, poker tracker software is out there that may help you manage multi-tables a little bit easier, because then you can spot different spots where you can make a play even though you don't have the best hands. And I know some people definitely take advantage of that. So, all right, guys, thanks. Take care.
Yeah, I mean, I think our point was, you know, probably we should have set at lower limits, because I think that's what we're thinking. Obviously, when you're up in the higher limits, generally speaking, the players, not always, but generally speaking, the players are better and paying more attention at the time. So you need to be a little more craftier. But, you know, a lower limits game, particularly like an Omaha 8, I mean, you got a bunch of people that don't know what they're doing. So, you know, as long as you're just playing solid premium hands, you're going to make money. The reason that you would multi-table is that you don't get as many solid premium hands in an Omaha 8 game as you do in a Hold'em game. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, good point.
All right. Well, what are you going to give them?
All right, let's see. Well, you know, I guess we just got to come out with it now. It just seems so boring.
I know.
I'm sad, but all right, let's see. We'll give you a card protector from PokerFaces.tv. How's that, Jeremy?
That works for me. It seems like when we used to have that spinning thing, that came up a lot, so why not do it again
today? Yeah, we'll keep the poppy things going.
This next one is a mailbag letter that I want you to answer, because I really have no clue. So Ward Hall wants to know, what else is there to do in Vegas? So
very simple mailbag. He just said one quick question. I think he's going out there. I don't know if it's for the World Series. I think it is, actually. He obviously didn't want to play cards all the time. And let's not boo and hiss at that. There are people like us out there that like to do other stuff besides play poker. You know, I run it back with a couple things. One thing I'm big on is the Mac King Afternoon Comedy Magic Show at Harrah's. Very cheap. And sometimes if you just walk up to that little annoying carnival court thing outside there, they'll just give you free tickets. So definitely hit that. Obviously on the show, I've always talked about the great steak special at Ellis Island that I know you like, Chris, or at least you pretend to like. And it's nudged up in price, but I think it's $7, but you get a beer with it, so... I mean, geez, some places $7 cost is what a beer costs.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I don't know if it's still out there, because obviously it's been a year since I've been out there, but I really do hope the Fat Elvis is still at Bill's Gaming Saloon, which used to be a Barbary Coast. That guy puts on a heck of a show. The guy's like, I don't know, 7,800 pounds, and sits on a throne and just belts out Elvis tunes. Very good. I mean, Elvis impersonators all over Vegas, but that guy, he's like 20-1, and it's a good show. So those are probably my top three right now. Of course, we're going out there in a couple weeks, so you know, maybe I'll find new stuff.
Now,
and then, of course, I also mentioned two of my favorite websites, CheapoVegas.com, and, of course, the famous LasVegasAdvisor.com, where you can get that great coupon book that I know you're salivating at, Chris.
Yeah, I know. That guy's your hero, too. That's Anthony Curtis or whatever. He's your hero, so... I remember last time we went out, you had him sign your book. That was unbelievable. Can you get your autograph? All right, so since you did the mailbag, I'm going to tell him what he won.
All right.
We're going to give him a set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com. So even though you're out there in Vegas doing other things besides poker, when you do sit down at the table, you got these cards to help you guide you through some big winnings. So good luck with those.
Excellent. So Ward, send us your address, and everybody, when you send us a mailbag question, the podcast at AnyUpMagazine.com, always include that address in there so we can expedite your swag delivery.
All right, let's complete a mystery today, the case of the too good deal. Let's hear part one.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, the case of the too good deal. It's the first hour of a 1,000-player no-limit hold'em multi-table tournament. It's in the early rounds that we wish to take advantage of our deep stacks and see some flops. We are eight-handed this hand, and we have the button. Under the gun folds, MP min raises, fold, 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 cutoff calls, and this is a great place to call and see a flop. We have jack of clubs, nine of diamonds. This hand has hit hard or fold all over it. So we call, as do the blinds, and five players see a flop of four of diamonds, jack of hearts, king of diamonds. The blinds check to the original bettor, who bets out 120, which is really a feeler bet into a 300 pot. The cutoff folds. I'm going to float this here because I have a sneaking suspicion I know what his hand is. The blinds fold, and the turn is the 9 of hearts. Our opponent now bets out 90 into our 540. What do you want to do?
Okay, so, you know, we're trying to do better at doing real analysis.
Yeah, yeah.
On the hand of the week. Real, not the fake stuff that I guess we had been doing. So there's a couple posts on the forum, and we've looked them over, and it seems to me, and jump in here, Chris, if I'm mischaracterizing this, but our forum posters are split between calling or raising here. But even those who are suggesting raising are a little bit conflicted on how much to raise, considering we're still not sure where we are on this hand, and if we raise, we're opening it up to being put to a test with a re-raise. But one of my favorite comments came from Raskin, and he says, small bets early in the tournament are often blocking bets designed to let the bettor get cheap looks at a next card. And I think that's an interesting point here when we're deep stacked, that maybe this guy is putting out small bets because he's on a draw and wants to keep the pot small. So, well, it's not a free card, it's a cheap card for him. And maybe that's what's at play here.
Yeah, I mean, if that's how you feel, if you feel like this guy's on a draw, or if you feel like maybe he's got a pair here, but with a tentative kicker or something, then you got to raise here. You can't just call because if he is drunk, you're giving him the price that he wants to pay rather than the price you want to pay. And you got a very good hand that needs protecting here. There's straight draws, there's flush draws, so I would probably make it like 300 to go or 400 to go maybe. Because there's enough into the pot now, 630, I guess, after that $90 bet. You know, I would have to bet like 2/3 of the pot here because I got two pair. And I think my hand's good here. I don't think that we're looking at a set by the way it was played, and I don't think we're looking at King Jack because that would be unlikely. So I think our hand's good, and I'd put in a healthy raise.
All right, now a couple of the folks on the forum had asked us to kind of tape our responses in advance, and that's just not technologically doable for lots of reasons. But I did write down my response last week when I first heard it, and reviewing it now, and I haven't changed, actually. How's that?
That's good.
I have not been influenced by any of the forum posters or a week to reflect on it. At that point, I said that I'm going to put in a min bet here, or min raise.
Uh-huh.
And because here's the thing. I think this opponent's a small bet. It's either a dog walk from a monster or a timid bet from a weak hand. And I want to find out what it is as cheaply as possible right now. So I'm not just going to check, obviously. I've got two pair. But at the same time, I'm worried if I put in a big bet and I've been walked here that, boom, I'm going to be put to that test. And I don't really want to be put to a test with two pair when it's not the top two pair.
Hey, let me ask you, though. If you just min-raise and he was on a drawing hand and he calls, and then a heart drops or, like, the nine drops
or
an ace drops, would you get away from the hand now with two pair?
And I would put it more likely that he does have a draw, and therefore if a card that completes a draw comes, I would have to be a little more cautious. I'm not necessarily sure I'm going to fold to a bet, but that's kind of the information I'm looking at. If he's got a monster, or at least he's stronger than a non-draw hand, I got to think when I put in this small raise that he's going to come alive, I would hope.
Yeah.
I'm really looking for a little bit of information, and obviously it doesn't stop him from getting his draw there, but if he just calls, then that makes it more likely to me that he is on a draw. And then I'm hoping that a draw card doesn't come, because then I'll feel pretty confident with my hand. But if a draw comes, then you know, we'll have to see what kind of bet he puts out.
Yeah. All right, well, let's see what happens then.
Welcome back. Well, what did your analysis of the hand determine?
You guys looking for something?
When I look at hands, I want to look for three things. Does his range give me action from a hand that's behind? Have we reached a point of no return in the hand? And what does the betting story so far tell me? For number one, he made an insignificant mid-raise from mid-position, so I put him on a small pair or, since we're early, ace-king, ace-queen. For the second part, with starting stacks at 3K and the pot having 630 in it, we're about 1,000 chips away from no return. And number three, the betting looks to me like he hit a king and then made a weird defensive bet to get me to call cheaper. Based on these three items, I figure he now wants to get the showdown and is trying to avoid building a big pot. With 630 in there, I'm going to put my re-raise in on the turn. I would normally raise 300 to 350 here, but since I think he might have ace-king now, and I have two pair, I'm going to make the larger bet of closer to 400. I raise it to 500, and he calls the additional 410. The river's the 7 of clubs. Since there's no way I can put him on 810 here, I'm going to consider the 7 a blank. I expect I have him now, and all I can hope for is a value bet when he checks. Sure enough, he checks, and I bet about 300, and he calls and mucks what turns out to be only King 10. Until next time, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com reminding you to disguise your hands.
Hey, I always like when Columbo takes out a pot.
Yeah, you know, it's better that way. He seems more jovial when he wins rather than when he loses. It's good to see him win once in a while, otherwise he might never come back.
And, of course, he says, that river really, in his mind, is a blank, and I had to agree with him. So,
yeah.
Had he been playing it my way, I think I still would have won. but he got more money out of him, so he wins. He wins more.
That's cool.
Yeah, he wins better.
King 10, I mean, that explains the $90 bet. He wasn't happy with his kicker.
I want to talk about this a little bit, too, because this is an evolution in my game that I've realized. I used to be the guy who would be making these tiny little bets out of position with a hand like King 10 with this kind of board.
Uh-huh.
And it was a real weakness in my game, and I hope other players out there are realizing why it's weak here, too. Obviously, there's some confusion. It caused some confusion in Columbo's mind by the bet, but ultimately it gets sniffed out. If you've got this kind of hand and I'm playing it from out of position, I the small bets I just don't think are working.
Yeah, no.
Either have to put out a big bet and commit to it and say, hey, you know, I think I got the best hand and I'm going to put some doubt in your mind. Or check and kind of respond to the other bets and maybe even do a check raise. But putting out a small bet like this on, you know, 2-3 streets in a row, it's just a way of a drain of your money, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you see it a lot online, too, where people will put out a small bet and then someone will come way over the top. And it just makes them fold. So you know that there's something, most of the time, that the person who's putting a small bet out is weak and it's not a monster, you know, because most monsters will check. So, you see that a lot online, that the weak bet really, that's why it's weak, because people who are strong will bet stronger than that and force you to go running into the night. So,
that's excellent.
Good hand. Good mission this week.
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that PokerStars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our PokerStars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Chris, we all know that this month that several banks complied with orders from federal prosecutors from the Southern District of New York to freeze more than $30 million that had been destined for online gamblers. Since then, players have been frustrated when trying to make e-check deposits or cashing checks from online rooms. Leaders of the Poker Players Alliance, a grassroots organization that seeks to protect poker players' rights, have been frequent guests on Ante Up, and joining us today to discuss this issue is Executive Director John Pappas. John, thank you for taking some time out of your very busy day for Ante Up.
Thank you, and thank you, Ante Up, for having us on.
Excellent. All right, well, there's a lot of confusion going on over what exactly the prosecutors have done and or seeking. So can you start us off by just kind of breaking down what happened and what it means for poker players?
Sure. Well, the action was certainly unprecedented, but not necessarily surprising, given that it came out of the Southern District of New York, which has had, for lack of a better term, kind of hard up over internet gaming for quite some time now. They've initiated some other actions. What the surprising thing is that this is the first time that they've actually ever targeted online poker, and particularly online poker players, which we contended quite forcefully, and I believe we're on the right side of the law here, is that it's not unlawful for individuals to play poker online. Therefore, the government has no business trying to seize their funds. So what happened here was that the Southern District issued notices to up to four financial institutions, including payment processors that deal solely with online poker transactions. And these are payouts, mind you, and told those banks to seize the funds of those or to freeze the funds of those accounts. Now, the funds have not been seized by the bank. They're simply frozen by the DOJ. They're simply frozen by the bank at this time. And what we're doing is working diligently with not only the banks, but also those at the Justice Department to explain the situation and to let them understand that the money that they've frozen is not the proceeds of unlawful gambling, as they are claiming, but rather they are internet poker players' monies. And beyond that, internet poker playing is not unlawful in any way, shape, or form, therefore shouldn't have been subject to seizure. So we've been in a dialogue, a productive dialogue, we believe, but we are reserving the right to file any action against the Southern District should it warrant. But as of right now, we're kind of in a wait-and-see approach.
Is this sort of action related to the UIGEA or the WIRE Act? Is this all stemming from that?
Well, it's interesting because there's some misconception that it has to deal with the UIGEA, but a couple things we need to be clear. While the UIGEA was finalized in January, banks aren't forced to comply with the law until December 1st of 2009. And so it would seem odd that the DOJ would be enforcing a law that the banks aren't even required to comply with. So we don't think it's that. Further, the UIGEA has a specific exemption in it for payouts to players. The UIGEA is really set up to stop the deposits onto offshore accounts rather than the payouts to the players. So I don't think that they're going to be using the UIGEA in their claim. Rather, more likely, they're trying to apply the WIRE Act or the, I believe it's called the Illegal Gambling Business Act from 1955, both of which have been interpreted by the highest courts not to apply to internet poker, but simply to internet sports betting. So we feel that we're on pretty strong legal grounds in terms of combating any claim that they're coming at it, particularly from the WIRE Act or the Illegal Gambling Business Act, and certainly the UIGEA.
So is it your belief that this is some kind of politically motivated thing, someone trying to get their name in the headlines? I mean, it doesn't seem like...
It's hard for me to say, and I don't want to speculate. Like I said, the Southern District has had a habit of kind of trying to make headlines in this area, and we believe that they may have been acting without understanding the kind of the political fallout that could fall on them from this, particularly when you recognize that poker players have become, you know, a motivated political force through the Poker Players Alliance and through their own initiative. And for the most part, the Poker Players Alliance viewed the Obama administration to be kind of a new hope, if you will, for online poker and for the rights of people who want to play online. So this kind of came as a shock to a lot of people, but I don't believe that this is a coordinated effort coming from the top down, but rather perhaps the actions of a sole prosecutor trying to get his name in the headlines.
You had said about the PPA possibly taking legal course with this, but I have a question now. Since the PPA can't legally represent any of the larger rooms that are affected by this, because you don't have what's called standing with them, what can you really do legally to help out here?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't ever be our interest to stand up for the poker sites themselves. What we want to do is stand up for the poker players.
Okay.
To make sure that this seized money gets returned rightfully to the players. As you know, the players' money in many cases has been returned via the sites themselves. But that money is still technically frozen, and the PPA could file an action to unfreeze that money, the players' money, and you know, all we need are PPA members who have been affected by this, and we do have a class of PPA members who've been affected by this, and we are weighing our options in that area.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying. So, you know, it's not our interest to represent the sites in this manner. It's our interest is to represent the players who are the members of the PPA.
Absolutely. All right, so governments have done a number of things over the past few years to thwart online poker players, and you specifically mentioned this seems to be a habit of the Southern District. But players and rooms have seemed to almost always find a way to thwart those efforts. Do you think that's going to be the case here, or is this issue different or a little bit more worrisome than other ones?
Well, I think it's interesting that they focused on online poker, but again, I think we're on pretty solid legal ground in order to combat that. But what we've always said is that all of these approaches, from the UIGA to what Minnesota was trying to do, to what Kentucky was trying to do, to this action by the Southern District, is really the wrong public policy approach. What they ought to be doing, and what we've been advocating now for some time, is for governments to be seeking to license and regulate this industry, not trying to seek ways to prohibit it. Because of the fact that it's going to be very difficult to prohibit through any constitutional means. And beyond that, poker players will find a way. There is a demand in this country for people to play online poker, and no amount of government prohibition is going to suppress that demand, I don't think. And when there is demand, there will be a supply, and people will find a way. And I think once you start applying more pressure and strangling the flow of money, what you're doing is forcing players to find really alternative means in which to fund their online accounts, which I don't think is a benefit to anybody, not to the player, because they have to now operate with banks, offshore banks that they don't have a trust or a knowledge of. And then beyond that, they have to their money is going outside of the U.S. banking system, so there isn't the appropriate oversight, and there isn't the guarantees that they're going to get their money back should they be wronged. So we feel that in order to protect the players, in order to protect the integrity of the transactions, this needs to be licensed and regulated here in the U.S. so the U.S. banks can be the ones handling these transactions, not offshore payment processors.
Well, this particular case apparently is a legal one, and at first blush, it doesn't appear to be a political one, but is there anything that our listeners can do individually to help fight this then?
There certainly is. I mean, the PPA is actually, we have not organized, and for specific reasons, because we're, as I said, we're trying to figure this out through discussion rather than blunt political force, but I know a number of poker players are taking the initiative upon themselves to send a letter to President Obama via his White House .gov website and let him know that they, feel that this action by his DOJ is unwarranted and that he should respect the rights of poker players. Plus, the PPA is going to be launching very soon a real proactive letter-writing campaign, as well as a petition to Senator Obama, not just focus on this SDNY action, but more largely about the rights of poker players and how we need to preserve the rights of poker players. And certainly what's going on in the Southern District highlights why poker players need to be vigilant, why they need to not kind of sit back and wait for the government to act, but actually ask for the government to do something proactive in their benefit. And that's why we're kind of establishing a couple things. We're doing something called a poker petition, and you can find that at pokerpetition.com, and that will be live within the next 24 hours. We're also going to be announcing on Monday, and you guys are getting a little sneak preview here, we're going to be announcing on Monday National Poker Week, which is going to be an advocacy week in Washington, D.C., where we're going to be bringing the PPA state directors, which we have 50 volunteer state directors, as well as a number of the high-profile names in poker, the Howard Letterers of the world, the Annie Dukes, Andy Blocks, Greg Raymers, etc., coming to D.C. To meet with lawmakers. At the same time, we're going to be encouraging the poker community to be writing and calling Congress at that time. So you guys are getting a little sneak preview on that, but we're going to be formally announcing that at the World Series on Monday, June 22nd.
Awesome.
Excellent. Very good. Now, you mentioned President Obama and the hopes that I think a lot of us had that this administration would be different towards online poker. And one of the first things he did after he was elected was solicit via the web a list of priorities from Americans. Mm-hmm. And online poker rated very, very high on that list. Have you got any indication from the White House that they've recognized that and they're taking that into consideration? Or right now, are we still waiting to hear from them on what their beliefs are?
Probably at this point, it's safe for me to say that we're waiting to get an official policy response from them on online poker, although I can tell you that they know about the briefing book and that they're very well aware of the PPA and kind of this growing and important poker community out there. So I can't comment on as to what their position is, but I do know that they are aware, obviously, of the briefing book and that this issue is of importance to not only poker players, but those who appreciate internet freedom, those who appreciate personal responsibility, as well as the right to be able to engage in activities in the privacy of your own home.
Well, we did get some good news for poker players recently when Minnesota decided to end its attempt to prevent online poker in that state, and in no small part to the efforts of the PPA. What was the issue in that case, and what did the PPA do to fight it?
Well, that was it was a combined effort with the PPA kind of showing its political muscle, as well as IMEGA showing its litigious muscle, if you will, by filing suit against Minnesota. What Minnesota did was they put the state's ISPs, these are the internet service providers, those who provide internet access for Minnesota residents, and told them that they have to block access to up to 200 internet gambling sites, and then they provided a list. This is censorship of the internet, plain and simple. This is essentially telling ISPs that they have to censor the internet from their customers for certain access. And, something that you'd probably see in Iran or China, not something you'd expect from a progressive state like Minnesota that elected someone like Jesse Ventura. And so it was a little shocking, and poker players in Minnesota really stepped up. And over a course of just a few days, they mobilized, they flooded the phone calls at the Department of Public Safety, which initiated the order, as well as the governor's office and their own elected officials. And within 72 hours, one of the elected officials introduced a bill that would have prohibited the DPS from moving forward with the action. There was a hearing held a week later. The PPA was involved in all of that. And really, the political pressure was brought to bear against the DPS and the lawmakers and even the governor's office, where they kind of just said, hey, we don't know what the DPS did. They were acting kind of on their own here without any adult supervision, and we want our hands washed of this. So after about 3 weeks, DPS finally did announce that they were dropping the order, and I think the most important thing that came of this is it wasn't that they were just dropping the order and saying, we're going to figure out another way to go after these guys. What they said is, we ought to be seeking ways to license and regulate this industry, not prohibit it. So I thought that was a very positive direction for Minnesota to take, not only to drop the idea of censoring the internet, but going the complete 180-degree opposite and saying, in fact, not only should we be stopping our plans to prohibit the activity, but we should be seeing ways that the state could license and regulate and benefit from it. So we thought that was very positive.
I'm glad you brought that up, John, because I thought that was interesting, because I always worry about when we score these small victories, that it just emboldens opponents to get more creative in their fight against it. But are you seeing other states like Minnesota that when we win these small victories, we're actually winning them around to what the ultimate goal is to have it regulated?
Well, I think I think the situation in Minnesota would certainly scare off any other states from trying to try the same effort. But, right now, there are just a handful of states that have kind of contemplated this idea, including California, Florida, and now Minnesota. And historically, I know North Dakota has been out there on this issue. And I just from conversations that we've had with lawmakers at the state level, there is a growing interest in this. The PPA's preference has always been for a federal regulatory model in which states could opt into, rather than each state by state creating their own set of regulations. As you know, for the internet poker model to succeed and for players to get the most enjoyment and satisfaction out of playing, there needs to be multiple jurisdictions that operate under the same rules and regulations in order for players to be able to play at, you know, all times of the day and at different stakes and have available games to them. If you limit it to just players within Minnesota being able to play with players in Minnesota, you really limit the ability to have the kind of games that people want to play, whether it's a high-stakes game or even a penny-ante game. Those would be very limited. So we appreciate those efforts, and we think that helps kind of push the federal lawmakers in the right direction, but our focus has really been on a federal approach rather than state by state.
Well, you bring up the federal approach, and of course, U.S. Representative Barney Frank introduced legislation to regulate online poker. What kind of odds of success are you giving that legislation?
Well, I mean, there are still some hurdles. We do know that he is planning to hold a hearing on the legislation shortly after the July 4th recess. So that is encouraging. Barney said he wants to bring this out and have a full, open, honest debate about it. He doesn't want to do this in kind of the backdoor way that the prohibition was thrust upon us. We appreciate that, but we also understand that there are some challenges with the legislation right now. There are plenty of opponents, particularly his ranking member on the committee, Spencer Baucus. But we do see that there is an opening for poker. Barney's Frank is broad. It allows for casino-style gaming. The NFL and others contend that it would open the door for internet sports betting. That wasn't Barney's intention by any means, and he's committed to kind of close that loophole for the NFL. But we see a growing sense in Congress for an appetite to move something that focuses on peer-to-peer style games like poker, rather than a broader internet gaming bill. And I think the sell for them is pretty easy. I mean, you can't say that allowing people to play poker from their computer at home is any different than how poker's been played for the last 150 years. People have been playing poker at home at their kitchen table for years, and simply because you've moved it from the kitchen table to the computer table, why is it now unlawful? That isn't the same for bringing a slot machine into someone's home or a roulette wheel into someone's home or a craps table. Those aren't just in people's homes today. And that's not how the game's been played. They've been played in the casino. So I think there's a, whether that is, you know, philosophically consistent, it may not be, but I do understand that there is a difference in the minds of lawmakers between poker and other forms of gaming.
Now, you mentioned, obviously, there's still quite a bit of opposition to this bill. I have to admit, I was a little surprised that some of our own listeners are opposed to this bill, worried about certain elements of it that aren't quite to their liking. Have you got that kind of feedback from some poker players?
We have, and I don't want to, sacrifice progress for perfect, and I think Barney's bill is certainly progress. It's moving the ball in the right direction. And I think what poker players need to know and those who aren't familiar with the legislative process is that bills that are introduced are never the bills that become law. They go through a complete process of change and revision. And we knew that there was going to be some problems with Barney's bill. We're concerned with the broadness of his opt-out provisions in the bill. We're committed to work with him to make those changes at the appropriate time. But again, I don't think we should stop progress for the perfect bill. And I think what poker players should know is that, you know, the PPA is going to fight to make sure that this bill is the right bill for the playing community, and that it expands their right and their ability to play online. And doing nothing is probably the worst thing that we can do. And the idea of fighting against ourselves, against someone like Barney Frank, who's a champion for us, seems rather less productive than it does than it will to advance our cause. So I think we should, rally around Barney's bill and know that the PPA is going to work to improve it. we're also working on our own legislation as well that focuses on internet poker specifically and doesn't bring in the broader game. So, you know, I think there's some opportunity to improve the legislation, and there will be improvement to it, I believe, between now and when and if it becomes law.
Well, one entity that we know is in support of the legislation is gaming giant Harrah's. Are they or any other large gaming entity also helping to fund PPA's efforts and seeing it succeed?
Well, we don't receive any funding from Harrah's. Let's be clear on that.
Right.
But they have been very helpful to us by providing us a very significant presence at the World Series of Poker this year. We have pretty much unlimited access. They've given us advertising space. We have a booth set up there. They have regularly during breaks in the action or the beginning of play promoted the PPA to the thousands of players that are playing in events. So we've had a very good working relationship with them. We think that having Harrah's standing up with us in this fight only kind of builds the credibility of our arguments. Other organizations out there is kind of the well-known online pari-mutuel betting site, YouBet. They came out in support of the Barney Frank legislation as well. They are a U.S.-based online horse racing site who would like to obviously expand their operations into other forms of gaming. This bill is a little different dynamic this year because you do have some other faces in the crowd, not just the Poker Players Alliance, you know, standing up from the mountaintops out there to support it.
All right, John, we appreciate your time, and we'll let you go here in a minute, but I want to follow up with something on the state thing that you mentioned. Obviously, here in Antioch, we publish Florida's Poker Magazine, and there's a little line in a bill that was passed this year that referenced online poker, and you mentioned that there was some action going on here. But we've always been confused as to what the impetus of that was, and can you give us kind of an idea from your point of view of what you think that was intended to do?
Well, I'll be honest. I think the way it started out was kind of with a jaundiced eye towards internet gaming and what can we do to kind of shut these guys down and preserve the monopoly for the card rooms and for the racetracks and other things in the state. But what it evolved into once the PPA and others got involved was, hey, this isn't the immediate knee-jerk reaction isn't going to be how do we shut this down. It's going to be how is the best way to deal with the industry. And so now what the law has prescribed is for one of the government agencies there to come out with a study to determine the best way to deal with internet gaming, and rest assured the PPA is going to be involved in a very significant way to make sure that those who are going to kind of come up with this study realize the benefits for licensing and regulation and know what's going on in Washington, show them what's happening in California and other states and push this in the direction of regulation rather than prohibition. So I think that's where I hope that's where this all will end up. But it was I think started off with the idea of how do we get these guys out of the marketplace, and now I think it's evolving to okay, how do we make this a model that works for the state?
All right. Well, thanks again, John, for joining us. I know you have you shortened the URL for your organization, so we'll let our folks know where they can go to get more information, if you would please.
Yeah, they can just easily come to the PPA.org, and we have a bunch of information about obviously the current actions in SDNY, Minnesota, up-to-date information as to what's happening on Capitol Hill. You can also use all the tools there to write your lawmakers, to send notes to President Obama. It's a real resource for the poker community, and we hope people will come to it and come to it often to see what's going on. And also come to our website, and you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and all of our other social networks, which are really growing by leaps and bounds over the last several months.
All right, John, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys, and I really appreciate reading your magazine when you guys send it up to me.
Thanks, we appreciate it.
All right.
Take care.
Take care.
Welcome to the Ante Up PokerCast. I'm Mike the Mouth Matisseau, author of my new book, Check Raising the Devil.
Very, very interesting hand of the week this week, Chris. I think you're going to like this. Sent to us by a listener named Anthony. And he says he goes back and forth with one of his buddies when they do this thing called What's My Hand?
Okay.
So they type the little hand history in, but they remove their whole cards from it and try to guess by the action what their buddies were holding in the hand. So I think we've done this before once or twice, and I kind of like it. So we're going to give it a go here because it's pretty good.
I just remember it being very difficult to give analysis to a hand without knowing what they have to tell them what they should do. That's why I used to always frown on these kind of hands. But
well, we'll put you to a test here.
Yeah, we'll see how it works out this time.
All right, so this is a 9-player sit and go on PokerStars, low buy-in kind of game. And our hero is 2,500 in chips, which is roughly about average. There's one, the chip leader's got about twice that, and there's one very short stack. So those two hand players must have tangled here in level one or level two, because we're at level two now in this $3 tournament.
Right.
All right, so we have a caller, a folder, a caller, two more callers, and we are in the small blind, and call. And, of course, our
cards.
Know what our cards are. And the big blind. All right, so here's his friend has jumped in with some analysis here. So this is probably the best way to do this. So if you just call with four limpers, what are we kind of thinking that we might be limping with here?
Some sort of suited cards. Maybe a small pair. But generally, these are the kind of hands that, you know, if you're going to call along, you've probably got like a Jack 10 or suited cards, you know, something like that. Or maybe even a suited ace, you know, small baby ace that you don't have any confidence in. But if you make the flush or the flush draw, you can go to war with it. So could be something like that. I mean, I don't think it's anything powerful because you would raise. So if you had that many limpers and you had like Queen, Queen, or Jack, Jack, or Ace, King, you would probably raise here because you're out of position. You'd probably raise a lot. So just calling and hoping for a good flop seems like to me like connectors or a small pair.
Okay. His friend said not a big pair.
Yeah.
Like I said, obviously a big pair you're going to raise. All right, so the big blind raises. Everybody calls, and so do we. So his friend is going to weigh in a little bit more based on this new information.
He doesn't know much more. Would they make it?
Big blind min raise.
Oh, min raise, okay. Yeah, well, that's, again, you know, I know the Scott Long school of poker is to min raise with connectors to get pot odds. So even though no limit hold'em, that really doesn't matter. But so, I mean, someone else could be having the same thing. A min raise there just builds a pot with that many people. So I don't put that guy on a big hand either.
All right, flop comes 10 of spades, 9 of spades, 2 of hearts. We check. The big blind checks. Under the gun, puts out a bet of 210. We get two callers. It's back to us, and we bump this baby 590 to 800 straight.
Wow. Well, it could be a hand like Queen Jack of Spades, because it's a monster draw. Could be a baby set.
Yeah, didn't think about the. Yeah.
Well, I think those. I mean, I'm only guessing those two cards because of the fact that. Of what I said earlier about I'll call along with suited connectors and a monster draw would be Queen Jack of Spades here. And then, or you could have 7-8 of spades and just be, you know, straight flush draw. Or you could have just 7-8, or you could just have Queen Jack and not suited. But since I'm saying suited connectors, I'm going to go with either a baby set, like a set of deuces, or a really good draw, like two overs in spades.
Okay, yeah, I'm thinking it's a set of some sort, because we're trying to protect. All right. So the big blind gets out of the way, and the initial raiser calls, everybody else gets out of the way. And the turn is the Jack of Hearts, and we check.
Huh. Oh, yeah, the check could be could still be a set now, because now you're afraid the straight draw got there.
Right.
So it could still be a set, or we could have a pair of jacks and a straight draw and a flush draw. You know, we could have the Jack of Spades in our hand. But I don't see myself checking if my hand was that powerful before. And if I have a set, I think I should still bet here to see where I am, if I can at least find out some information. So that's an interesting check. It's throwing me for a loop as to what we have a little bit now.
But, yeah, I guess it's a very perplexing check because, the straight got there, but then you'd have to be putting the under the gun player on 10-queen or...
No.
I mean...
King-queen.
King-queen, yeah, okay.
That could be a hand, king-queen.
It is possible, particularly if it's spades or something like that. Yeah, all right. All right, so he checks. The end of the gun player bets 2015, all in.
Yeah, see, this is where our new way of doing a hand of the week really falls apart, because you can't call an all in without knowing what the hand is, you know?
Well, our hero called it.
Well, if I had the set, or if I had the queen jack of spades, I would call. Or even if I had the 7-8 of spades, because I have my straight and I have a redraw to a flush.
Yeah,
so,
then you redraw into the flush.
Yeah, if I had something like that, even if I had a set, I think I'm calling, because it still doesn't feel like this guy's made it straight. Because if he made it straight, I mean, I realize he wants to protect against the flushes, but, you know, I would try to value bet here, not force somebody out. You know, So I don't know. I think if I had a set, or if I had any of the other hands I described, I would call too. So since he called, I got to put him on one of those hands. If he had like ace-ace, it's sick.
Yeah. All right, so I totally agree. We have to have a set or a baby straight or that flush draw, but with the redraw.
Right.
I can't see anything else. All right, so our opponent turns over. I'm sorry, the river comes, the six of spades. So okay. Spades get there.
Yep.
And our opponent turns over 10 of hearts, 9 of hearts. Or second two pair with a flush redraw when you put it all in.
Yeah.
But our hero collects the pot with a pair of ducks in his hand.
Yeah, baby set. That's exactly what we said at first, so that's good. Yep, baby set. That makes sense. And, again, I don't like to check on the turn unless you were confident that he was going to put it all in on a two pair. But, again, that check now also gave him the chance to hit his flush for free if he wanted to, so I didn't like that check.
Yeah, and that's a tough. So, would you put in a big bet at that point or a smaller bet?
Probably.
Now that you know the hand.
Probably at least half the pot, because we were willing to check raise 500 into a, you know, whatever that pot was at the time. So that was a pretty big bet there. I would have probably bet half the pot there, which. I guess at that point, I guess the pot would be about $1,000 or 1,000 unit bet or so. So yeah, I wouldn't make it small, because small, this guy, like, if you look at the hand, he has tens and nines, and he's got a redraw to a flush. He's going to call any small bet. But when you put the onus on him to make the decision, you just check to him, he decides the action now, and I hate that. So yeah, I would have put some sort of half to two thirds of the pot, I think, if I could afford it.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, always interesting to shake up the hand of the week a little bit. So that's what we did, and we'll probably resume to our normal hand of the week missionary position kind of explanation on next week's show. But this week, Anthony, for being so creative, we are going to give you the very newest thing on our swag shelf. We will be sending you a Wheeler Dealer Motorized Dealer from WheelerDealer.com.
Wow.
It kind of flips the cards. It deals the cards. You just hold in your hand, and it shoots the cards across the table, and you can flip them up or down.
And I think there's a Faso setting on there, too, that you can set it to for his velocity that he would normally throw the cards at the dealer at Derby Lane.
So. That's an extra special custom-made Wheeler Dealer that comes with a sharpener in there, too, so it sharpens the cards as it shoots. This is the base model Wheeler Dealer from WheelerDealer.com. So, Anthony, send us your address, and we will shoot that wonderful prize off to you. And everyone else, if you want to send us a hand of the week or a mailbag or anything like that, again, that address is podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And I guess we haven't mentioned it, a big miscue for us on the show, antiupmagazine.com/forum. We can go and find lots of cool stuff there.
All right. I want to thank John Pappas from the PPA for joining us today. It was great to have him on and answer some of our questions. And it was another good show. So I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.